With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Greetings, Grapple fans, and welcome to episode 75 of the Pro Wrestling Index here on the AI podcast channel. This is the longest running podcast in the history of entertainment. Well, actually, that's not true, but, you know, if WWE can get away with making similar false claims about Raw, then so can we. And it's been another eventful week in the wonderful world of wrestling. So plenty to discuss here, and here to help me do just that is my audio tag team partner, Mo Chatra. Mo, Raw, the longest running TV show in history and all that malarkey. I didn't realise TV started in 1993.
Yeah, I mean, there's only a few shows out there that have been running for about 50 years but, or more. But yeah, why let facts get in the way of a good bullshit lie? You know, it's never stopped the WWE in the past.
The best bit was they even named one of them, even longer than The Simpsons. What?
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, I mean, you know, obviously with The Simpsons, it's not a week in, week out show. But yeah, there's plenty of shows that have been running longer. Yeah, when it comes down to
The Dumb and the Desperate. Yeah. Coronation yeah. Street, all them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. You know, just 2 minutes of Googling it, and you find lots of shows that are longer than Raw. And, you know, it's a bit of an insult to everyone's intelligence, but, you know, I think at this stage, because of the bubble that Stephanie and her family live in, they almost convince themselves that it really is the longest running. So, more power to them, you know, if it makes them happy coming up with these lies and believing them, then fair play.
Yep, so that by those values, we are the longest running podcast in the history of anything ever. So here's one to hit you with, Mo, before we kind of get into things anyway. Chris Jericho challenging Kenny Omega in New Japan. What's going on?
Bloody hell. Well, I was watching New Japan's big show. I think it was on Sunday, just gone. What date would that have been? The 5th of November, I think. Yeah, so I'm just quietly watching the show. It was a very good show, as usual, from New Japan. And then all of a sudden, after Kenny Omega's match against Trent Barretta, who is a former WWE talent, video appears on the screen of a person in shadows, and then it turns out it's none other than YTJ Chris Jericho. I thought, bloody hell, what the hell was going on here? And I was just coming up with all types of speculation and tweeting it, and then it turned out that Jericho's contract had expired, and he was a free agent, and even whilst he was with the WWE, he was actually tweeting certain things about Kenny Omega, which got a lot of people talking in the internet wrestling community. And this is why. It's because he was planning this all along. And, you know, as soon as he became a free agent, he penned a deal with New Japan. And as a result of that, he will have a dream match of sorts with arguably the hottest talent in the business in Kenny Omega at New Japan's Tokyo Dome show on the 4th of January 2018. And I can't wait because it's going to be amazing.
I think that it's really caught a buzz, and it should be quite the show to watch. And obviously now it's just attracting more fans from all over, and not just, I think not just because you've got Chris Jericho there and all that attention that it brings, but I think WWE fans who previously probably wouldn't have been that interested in what was happening over in Japan, seeing all these people turning up in WWE, knowing that they've got the history over there and seeing how good they are. And I think that's kind of spiked an interest as well. So it's, I think it's healthy for the business, and it's good that there's so much going on. And it's obviously, like we said, there's WWE with this, the whole thing in Japan seems to be growing. And also ROH as well. That's doing well. So it's got to be good for the business that there's more going on, and the wrestling world has become more and more aware of other things that are going on, and it, not everything is centered around the WWE universe, as they like to call it.
And it never was. I mean, you know, well before the WWE or the WWF became an international juggernaut, you know, we had many promotions all around the world that were very successful. I mean, you go back to the 1960s and, you know, pro wrestling was doing very, very well all over the world. You know, Australia, UK, Germany, France, India, Pakistan, Nigeria, South Africa, Mexico, Canada, US, Hawaii, all over, everywhere, Japan. You know, even into the 70s, and it was only in the 80s when the territory started to die out as Vince went on this aggressive jaunt to try and achieve world domination as far as the wrestling business was concerned. But no, it's always been vibrant, you know, all over the world. It's just about being able to find it and look for it. And the great thing about the internet and modern technology is that all of this wrestling from all around the world is more accessible than ever before.
I think that's the key thing, Mo. Sorry, I think that's the key thing, is the accessibility. And it feels like in the last couple of years, it's become more and more accessible. And I think that's the thing now as well. More people are aware, and it's more easily accessible. So it's, I think it's good for the business. It's good for the talents that they've got other places to go, isn't it?
It is, absolutely, totally. And you know, there are people, you know, from who were contracted to the WWE, who this year decided to go on to the independent scene, go to Japan, because they just didn't want to deal with the hassle that comes with dealing with WWE creative, the hassle that comes with the politics, the hassle that comes with the nepotism that exists within the WWE. And, you know, on the independent scene and elsewhere, they can work with freedom without all of the politics and make very good money even still. You know, there's a lot of people making excellent money outside of the WWE. Matt Hardy, you know, used to boast about it on Twitter, the amount of money he was making from the independent scene. So there's definitely money to be made. But, yeah, just very quickly, I mean, I remember back in the 90s when, you know, I was part of a very small kind of section of the wrestling fan base in the UK that was buying tapes of Japanese wrestling and US independence in Mexico. And, you know, you'd have to wait so long, and there were not many people that were selling these tapes, and the quality of the tapes, the VHS tapes, was really, really poor. And now it's just completely different. I mean, there's so many promotions that have on-demand services. And what's also great to see is so many British promotions that are very successful. I mean, I've talked about them on this pod in the past. I mean, one example is Progress Wrestling, that's just about the coolest wrestling promotion out there. I mean, if you ever watch their stuff, it's just such a cool product. Not really aimed at the family audience, but it's not overly graphic, overly violent. It's not gratuitous. It's just more to aim towards, you know, a young adult audience, and it works fantastically well. And it's actually one of these promotions in the UK that's got a working partnership with the WWE. And there's been talk throughout this year that their programming, their shows will end up on the WWE network. It's not happened as yet, but they nonetheless have still got a very good on-demand service available for only something like $5 a month. And there's lots of promotions out there like that. And, you know, they're just so much good content. I mean, I've written an article this year for Total Wrestling where I said that the quality of the in-ring product when it comes to pro wrestling has never, ever been better. And I've been watching pro wrestling for coming up to 40 years now. And, you know, I've been watching it on a worldwide basis for over a quarter century, you know, from all over the world. Never, ever has it been as good as it is now. And that's what makes it slightly disappointing with the WWE, because as we've talked about at times, the quality of the in-ring product, you know, sometimes delivers magnificently, but it does underwhelm given just how much quality they've got on their roster. They've got so much talent, and so much of that talent doesn't quite deliver in the way that it can and it has done when it's been outside of the WWE. And I'm really hopeful that somebody just cottons on to the fact that, look, we've got a talent roster that's underperforming, and let's look at why they're underperforming. And if they do that and they just give the talent the freedom to perform in the way that they can freely perform elsewhere, whether it's the independents or Japan, the WWE product will be all the better for it.
I mean, well, speaking of the WWE product, I mean, as I mentioned at the top of the show, look, we've got a lot to talk about tonight, a lot to get through. We have got our nostalgia. Obviously Survivor Series is coming up, so we're going to have our nostalgia week tonight. Bit of a quiz there for more. Part of the nostalgia, we will take in some of your suggestions in there as well. We'll have a reaction to them. We're going to have a run down the NXT card ahead of the NXT TakeOver War Games event. But we're going to start in the UK and with WWE, because Raw, SmackDown have been in the UK, have been in Manchester. Two good events, got to be said, two good shows. And things changing more. Monday night, we had the Raw Tag Team titles change hands. I've got to say, I wasn't really expecting that one. And then Tuesday night, it was rumoured that it could be happening, and indeed it did. AJ Styles beats Jinder Mahal to become WWE champion. I mean, this really does change things around at Survivor Series, and I think certainly in the case of AJ beating Jinder Mahal, makes it a much more exciting proposition for what we're going to see in that match.
Yeah. Big surprises in a way. Not least because we hardly ever get title changes on WWE TV shows broadcasting out of the UK. You know, WWE UK shows are notoriously uneventful. So it was really a pleasant surprise to see these title changes, even though obviously, as you say, there were rumours floating about that the WWE Championship could be switching hands. It was great the first night, though, on Raw, when we saw Cesaro and Sheamus win the WWE Raw Tag Team Championships, because of the fact that they turned out in Liverpool kits and in front of the Manchester audience. That was just beautiful. So, you know, kudos to them. Kudos to Sheamus, who obviously, as we know, is a huge red. So that was great. And the match itself was very good. But, you know, we tend to expect that with Cesaro and Sheamus, that are, you know, as consistent a tag team as there is in the WWE at this moment in time. A tremendous pairing. And then the next night, the reaction to the win from AJ Styles was magnificent. Clearly, the vast majority of the audience didn't expect it. And that's what made the victory all the sweeter and all the more momentous. And, you know, given that the WWE is going on a tour of India next month, I did expect them to keep the title on Jinder up until then, and then perhaps go in a different direction after perhaps at the Royal Rumble, with him dropping the belt and then putting the belt onto somebody more credible who can carry the belt in the right way. But no, I was fine with the title changing hands, just simply because you know, Jinder for me is somebody who doesn't deserve the belt, has never deserved the belt, should never become the champion, and became the champion for completely the wrong reasons, as far as I'm concerned. No complaints from me that AJ is the champion. And hopefully now that he is the champion, you know, we'll get to see a really good match between he and Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series, unless we have another title change next week on SmackDown, and you can't rule that either. I mean, there's every chance that you know, there's a rematch that's demanded by Jinder, and he gets his way and reclaims the title, and then we go back to square one, and it's Jinder against Brock all over again.
But, yeah, because there's a women's championship on the line on Tuesday night and SmackDown as well, so it's kind of funny, isn't it, to see titles changing hands so close to a pay-per-view, especially a pay-per-view of this magnitude and the way that it's been built up with champion versus champion, you know, to be switching the belts around. It's a strange one, isn't it?
Well, that's right. And, you know, often there are reasons behind these things. We like to at least think there are good reasons behind surprise title changes, especially in the lead up to a big pay-per-view, and the Survivor Series is still one of the big four traditional pay-per-views. But I've personally got no problem with both title changes, just simply for the fact that the individuals of the teams that that won the titles are very, very good. And so in that respect, had no problems with the title changes. But you're quite right. Seems somewhat bizarre, somewhat strange, inexplicable almost, why this would happen prior to Survivor Series. And, you know, if anything, you know, it makes it a little bit more interesting leading into the show. And you know, if the intention is to try and create a bit of talk and a bit of interest, then you can say that it has worked, because this week there's certainly been a fair bit of buzz amongst the WWE fan base because of the events of Raw and SmackDown. And certainly people have been tracking down highlights on YouTube or elsewhere of these title changes, and been talking about these things a bit more than they perhaps had been in previous weeks and months. So, you know, if that was the intention, then job well done.
Yeah, fair play to them. Another guy who we got to see on Raw, and he got a hell of a reception, was Pete Dunne. But that does transition us nicely over to the NXT TakeOver event as well, as it happens, because it's going to be on the pre-show, I'm guessing it's pre-show, the dark match, whatever. On NXT TakeOver, it's going to be Pete Dunne against Johnny Gargano. Now, I'm confused, because this is for the UK Championship, and I'm struggling to put my finger on exactly whereabouts in the UK Johnny Gargano's from.
Yeah, maybe he's going to claim some, I don't know, grandparent or some kind of lineage, but Gargano doesn't sound like much of a name you'd associate with somebody from Tipton or, you know, Droitwich or Bath or Exeter or something. that one's somewhat lost on me, but, you know, it still means, look, we get to see Pete Dunne on a bigger show, and, you know, we really haven't seen anywhere near enough of him on WWE programming as we should have done. Yes, he's put in the odd appearance on NXT, but given he won a WWE Championship belt back in May, and he was a star of the two-night tournament that emanated out of Blackpool back in January, at that point in time onwards, he should have become a regular on WWE television. And if he was made to be the focal point of 205 Live, you know, I'm not saying that it would have been a roaring success, but it would have certainly stood a better chance of being noticed and registering something on the WWE Universe's Richter scale. because, you know, he clearly outshines everyone else on that brand at this moment in time. Now that obviously we have no more Neville, no more Austin Aries. He's certainly got charisma, an aura about him, star presence, and all the more impressive for somebody from my former hometown of Birmingham. So fair play again to Pete Dunne. He's an exceptional talent. I've got a lot of for him.
I mean, his opponent here, Johnny Gargano, I mean, we laugh, obviously, there is absolutely no British connection. It's a bizarre one for it to be for the UK title. But yeah. Johnny Gargano, you know, Johnny Wrestling, he's a fantastic in-ring competitor. So, I mean, you know, you've eulogized there about Pete Dunne. I mean, basically, more what we're looking forward to here is essentially a fantastic wrestling match.
That's right. Yeah, I believe it's actually going to be part of the Takeover Events pre-show. And I know you're not one to normally watch pre-shows, Andy, but
this will get me watching it.
You will watch it. Yeah. I mean, this will be a very, very good match. It really should be an excellent match. Johnny Gargano is familiar with Pete Dunne. I think they've worked together in the past, and you know, they know each other well. Certainly, they've worked the promotions, you know, like Progress, that, you know, both individuals have worked for, and you know, so they're familiar with each other's work at the very, very least. And you know, these are two guys that like to give it the raw, and you know, it's just a shame that it's on the pre-show. In fact, if it had a bit more build, and had it been on the main card, it would have very easily stolen the show. But nonetheless, I still think it will be very, very strong a match, and a great way to kick off the night.
Yeah, absolutely so. And another match that I'm not sure how it's going to play out. Aleister Black against the Velveteen Dream. I'm a big fan of Aleister Black. I love the way he carries himself. It's just something about him. He's got a certain charisma about him. He's explosive, great striker. He's really connected with the crowd. I just think this is going to be interesting to see how they handle this one.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they've been building the match up for several weeks, and you know, they've had you know, heat segments where the team gets the upper hand on Aleister Black. But really, it would be a travesty, in my view, if, you know, Aleister Black's doing the job here. You know, he's got something about him, and, you know, he should be pushed in 2018 as almost like one of the focal points of NXT. He's an exceptional talent. As you say, he's certainly got something about him, star presence, aura, charisma, and a quiet charisma, not the usual kind of, you know, very extrovert personality. He's got a different type of charisma, and you know, he's got that something special, and he knows how to carry himself. And you know, the reason why that character works is because, you know, that character is not a character. It's a real person. That is Aleister Black. That's the person behind the gimmick. It's one and the same. And you know, when you've got that authenticity, it really helps a character get over when it's an extension of that real life individual. And, you know, on top of that, the way he works, matches, you know, brings something slightly different, you know, with his striking, etc. So I'm hoping that we see more of that. And as I say, it would be just a complete joke if he isn't put over. And I hope he's put over strong.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. The women's championship, the vacant NXT women's championship, Ember Moon versus Kairi Sane versus Nikki Cross versus Peyton Royce, with Billy Kay by her side, of course, in a fatal four-way. How do you see this one going then? Because does this have to be the crowning of Ember Moon, or do they have to go along the lines of Kairi Sane winning that tournament and has now got to sort of really be pushed into the focal point of this, or do they go with the with the outsider option of either Nikki Cross or Peyton Royce.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one where they go with this one. I mean, obviously, Asuka was a very long-term champion of, it was over 500 days, wasn't it? It was a very long title reign. And not that it should come into it in any way, but if they have Kairi Sane winning the title, then yet again, another person from Japan holding that belt is something that they might just want to have, you know, a slight difference with, and go with, go in a different direction. Somebody like a Nikki Cross might be just that person. You know, she's a very good worker. She's got a very interesting gimmick, one that you take notice of. And I think they can do different things with Nikki Cross. Whereas Kairi Sane, you know, she's a different type of worker to Asuka, but not completely dissimilar. So you would get slightly more of the same with her. Whereas with Nikki, I think you can do different things with her. And so that's why I'd like to see her win the belt. But you can't rule out Ember Moon. You know, she had a couple of really good matches with Asuka earlier this year. I think it was late last year as well, possibly. And certainly came across very impressively. If Royce wins the title, then I'm just going to stop watching NXT. And I might just stop watching WWE because that will be the travesty of all travesties.
She's not that. She's actually quite decent. She's certainly a lot better than Billie Kay.
She's improved. She's okay, but I mean,
I like the way they carry themselves. Them too. They really do carry themselves well. They are
good heels.
Yeah, they are. Well, mention heel there. What's coming to my mind is, do we perhaps see a heel turn here from Ember Moon, her not win the title and a heel turn in the process? Is this what this is? You know, maybe Kairi Sane wins it and we see a heel turn from Ember Moon. Do you think even that's a possibility?
Oh, it always is, yeah. I mean, the storyline of Ember, you know, coming so close to winning the title and then this newcomer that's only been in the company for 5 minutes turning up and winning the belt. You know, it's very easy to develop a story off of that and run with it. And that would certainly work perfectly well. And got no doubt that Ember Moon can work very well as a heel. If anything, with those kind of contact lenses she wears, she probably is more suited to being a heel. So that's certainly a possibility. But yeah, the good thing about the match is, though, that, you know, the belt can easily end up on any of the four individuals. You can't rule any of those possibilities out. And that's the way it should be, really. But
yeah, that's exactly.
It's a foregone conclusion. Your interest in the match will be significantly less.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, just the way it should be. I'll save the other one for last, because I know you used to watch the WCW back in the day. So next one we'll look at is the NXT Championship. Drew McIntyre defending against Cien Almas. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. So, yeah.
Andrade, Cien Almas. Now, I've got to say, I like McIntyre. I like him. I've been very disappointed with his title reign, though. It's come across as kind of mundane and a bit boring to me. And this feud, if you can even call it a feud, I've got to say, Moore's done absolutely nothing for me at all. And this has been, I found, the really disappointing NXT Championship run.
Yeah, I mean, it's a surprising one because McIntyre on the independent scene, whilst he was away from the WWE, had actually, on the whole, been very good. I mean, I saw some of his indie matches, which were completely underwhelming. But I saw other matches he had where he was actually really, really good. But I've got to agree with you. I mean, since he's returned, certainly since he won the championship, he hasn't really set the NXT world on fire by any stretch of the imagination. And You know, perhaps it's to do with the fact that he's feuding with Almas, and Almas hasn't really, again, got himself over in the way that perhaps people expected. He came in with a lot of hype. La Sombra coming in from, I think it was CMLL, it might have been AAA in Mexico. And, you know, there was big things expected of him, and he hasn't really lived up to the hype, and he's fallen short of expectations. So he's coming in, he's McIntyre in his first kind of full feud since winning the belt, against a talent who isn't really over. And furthermore, you know, he's, it really doesn't have a very strong distinction in terms of face heel kind of divide.
No, it's so bland. It's bland. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's quite bland. And and I don't see it being a great match. And I certainly don't see the title changing hands.
No, neither do I. I think that they'll look to keep the belt on the champion for a while. And you know, certainly there'll be another NXT takeover the weekend of the Royal Rumble in a couple of months. And then certainly at WrestleMania weekend, we'll also see another NXT takeover then. And I would suspect that they'll look to keep the belt on McIntyre till then, because as we know, they tend to prefer longer title reigns for the NXT championship. They certainly don't like to play hot potato with the belt. And,
no.
But, you know, that's good. So that's why, you know, on his first big takeover defense, just can't see him dropping the belt. But, you know, they might just decide, well, look, let's just keep it going for another couple of months. And if that's the case, then they might decide, let's switch the title now and then have McIntyre reclaim it at the takeover in January. And then after the title defense against the fallen champion, perhaps a week or two later on the regular NXT show, they can then line up somebody else for McIntyre to feud with leading into WrestleMania.
I hope not.
No,
I want them to move on from this and get someone more interesting for him. But yeah. Anyway, bye's a bye. So the final one, the one I'm sure you are looking forward to, the War Games match. So we've got the Authors of Pain with Roderick Strong against Sanity of Alexander Wolf, Eric Young, and Killian Dame, and the Undisputed Era, Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, Kyle O'Reilly. So this one, did you want to explain to listeners a bit more about the War Games?
Yeah, sure. So War Games is a match that started out in the promotion that became WCW that used to be known as the NWA. And this is a match that started out around, I think it was about 1987 or 88. And originally it was a match designed for the Four Horsemen. So when they used to have, you know, Ric Flair, Tully Blanchard, Ole Anderson, Arn Anderson, had opponents like Dusty Rhodes, the Road Warriors, Lex Luger, Barry Windham, others. They settle their differences. It would all culminate in War Games. And War Games is about having two rings next to each other and having a double cage surrounding the two rings. And the whole idea was that you'd have a flip of the coin, which the heels would win on every single occasion in the history of WCW. Obviously, one opponent from each of the teams would start out, and then whoever won the coin toss would then enter the cage next. And it would be 2-on-1 for several minutes until the face side inevitably and invariably evened it up several minutes later. And then so it continued until all of the members of each team were in the ring. But certainly the team that won the coin toss would have one person advantage up until the point at which everyone was in the cage. And once everyone was in the cage, that's the point at which the match could finish. And it was only a 1-4 finish. So it wasn't an elimination type match where everyone had to lose by pinfall or submission. And this often delivered some of the most heated, most intense matches in the history of WCW. So it almost always delivered really good matches until the days when Hulk Hogan and his cronies, like the Nasty Boys, turned up on the scene and ruined that very, very great concept of War Games. But until then, you know, it was a great, great match. I remember Paulie Dangerously, now known as Paul Heyman, his Dangerous Alliance facing Sting's team, and Brian Pillman and others were in that. And again, that was a magnificent match, one of the best matches in 1992 from WCW. So it was a great, great match. This obviously has a difference in that we've got three teams, so I'm not quite sure how a coin toss will work, because coins tend to be two-sided, unless anyone knows of a three-sided coin. I'm sure they'll figure some way of working it. And you know, if it comes even close to the quality of War Games matches from the glory days of WCW, then we're in for a treat. So I'm actually looking forward to seeing how they deliver this, and it will certainly not only be a great spectacle, but it'll, for a long time fan like me, bring back some fun memories as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say, I don't really care who wins. I'm just kind of intrigued to see this, and just to see how it'll play out. And just like you say, as a spectacle, it's going to be interesting to say the least. And I think this is just another one of those, the influence of Triple H, and obviously his background and his.
Well, yeah, what he grew up watching, and
He was a part of WCW before he was in. He moved to the then WWF as well. So you know, he's got that background. He, like you say, what he grew up watching. You know, his heroes were all involved in this. So
yeah,
the influence is clear, and I think at the very least, it's going to be interesting. And this, I suspect more that this is almost the guinea pig to see whether or not WWE will attempt this at some point on the main roster, I guess, to see how this plays out, how they're going to handle it, what the reaction's like during the match and after it, to whether or not they maybe attempt a version of this on the main roster at some point down the line.
Well, that's it. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Vince is notorious for rejecting any concepts, ideas that have been used elsewhere, especially in promotions that he bitterly hated and were seen as, you know, rivals for the WWF or WWE. And so it's a surprise to an extent that the War Games concept is being used in the WWE. But yeah, I mean, you're quite right. If it works well, you never know. We might see a Chamber of Horrors match in the WWE. We might see the Triple Cage of Doom. We might see the World War III pay-per-view concept reprise with three rings. There's all sorts of possibilities. There's all sorts of wacky ideas that were
Punjabi prison matches. Yeah, there's everything. You name it.
Yeah, indeed.
It should be interesting, and the event itself should be interesting. We'll see how it goes. Open mind. And I suspect if we go in with medium expectations, I suspect it will over deliver and be part of a cracking weekend. So
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites.
So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's it. Look, there's your NXT TakeOver preview. That's all done and dusted. It's time now for us to get to the bit that we've been looking forward to. It's time for a bit of nostalgia, Survivor Series style this time. So before we crack on with it more, I've lined up a bit of a Survivor Series quiz for you. So I'm ready to test your grey matter. A couple of them I think are quite simple. I think they're easy enough to get, but a couple of them might be a bit tougher. So let's just see how you do. So the first one, this is a multiple choice question. The Elimination Chamber made its debut at Survivor Series, but in which year? Was it A, 2002, B, 2003, or C, 2004?
2002.
You are correct. That was a good one. Question two. Where did the 1997 Survivor Series take place? Was it A, Calgary, B, Toronto, or C, Montreal?
How can I forget? And especially given the fact I've written an article about it just this past week, it's Montreal.
Of course it is, yeah. 20 years ago since the Montreal Screwjob, blimey. Question three. The 2001 Survivor Series was headlined by the Invasion angle with Team WWF versus Team Alliance. Now, the Alliance was led by Steve Austin, but can you name three of the four other teammates on that that team with Steve Austin?
Oh, that's a tricky one. Diamond Dallas Page.
Oh, no.
Kurt Angle.
Yes.
Booker T.
Yes.
And I'll go with, right, who was in WCW?
I'm going to push you for time.
right, I'll go with Lance Storm.
No. RVD or Shane McMahon were the other ones.
Oh.
Ironic, isn't it? Kurt Angle and Shane McMahon are in it this year. Hey. Right, question four. The Undertaker famously made his debut at Survivor Series, but which year was it? Was it 1989, 1990, or 1991?
1990.
It was indeed. And last question. The 2006 Survivor Series had a traditional elimination match with a bit of a twist. It was the Spirit Squad versus a team of legends. Now, the team of legends obviously won, but can you name them? I'll tell you what, I'll let you. Can you name three of that team of four legends? I will give you a clue and say one of them's no longer with us, tragically.
Rowdy Roddy Piper.
No.
Oh, dear. Jimmy Snooker?
No.
Oh, dear. I thought they fought against the Generation X. I remember. Okay. I'll have to pass. Go on. Tell me the answer.
Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes, yeah. Ron Simmons, and Sergeant Slaughter.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, well, that was. That was a bit of a out there question. I've got to say I'm impressed with especially the first one, the Elimination Chamber, picking that one off. I didn't realise, till researching it, I didn't realise it was so long ago that we first saw Elimination Chamber. So there you go.
15 years, blimey.
Yeah, and 20 years since we had the Montreal Screwjob. I mean, you still remember watching that at the time?
Oh, yeah, goodness, that was incredible. And I think it's actually 20 years today, as we record this on the 9th of November, for memory. It was 9th of November 1997, and I had started writing a newsletter, and I wrote a big, big article on it, which ran in about 6 pages, because it was just, at the time, the most incredible story I think any wrestling fan had ever come across.
The thing is that was the aftermath, though, wasn't it? Because actually watching it live, did you realise that what had happened, or a sniff of it? Because you got the sense that was something else was going on there. It wasn't your normal finish, was it? And I don't just mean them calling for the bell. I mean just the reaction. You know, the obviously Vince McMahon and the agents around the ring, and you could tell by the reaction of Bret Hart, something you could tell this wasn't normal, was it?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I was aware about what was going on behind the scenes leading up into the show, because by that point in time, I was the European distributor for the Wrestling Observer newsletter, which at that time and still is the best insider news source for the pro wrestling business. And so I used to receive the copies from Dave Meltzer by email every week. And obviously I was reading the story as it was developing about Bret Hart wanting out from the WWF and wanting to go off to the WCW. And, you know, this was a very, very big, contentious talking point leading into the Survivor Series. So I was aware about the tensions that were going into the show, but I didn't expect what happened to happen. Certainly when that match finished in the way it did, certainly started putting two and two together and thinking, well, this is clearly something to do with the plan for Bret wanting out of the company. And you know, it was, you know, obviously we had the internet around back then. So, you know, I went online the next day and, you know, there were websites that were reporting that, yeah, it certainly seemed to have been somewhat of a screw job. And obviously the next night on Raw, it was confirmed. And I think in those days, if you remember, we didn't get Raw live. So we had to wait until, I think it was a Friday night or a Thursday night.
Yeah, it was later in the week, yeah. But it had such a different feel to it, didn't it? And I'd say it was a night that kind of changed the whole shape of and landscape of professional wrestling, really. Because that was from that spawned the Mr. McMahon character. You know, for all obviously Stone Cold was already happening. Well, it was on the way to happening. That really, that moment, that event, you know, the Survivor Series there, that really spurned that Mr. McMahon character and turned him into, you know, legit the biggest heel to the fans. So it was a night that really changed the whole complexion of the business.
It was a very monumental event, or so it felt at the time. But it's interesting, actually, because I was asked to write for Total Wrestling an article about how that angle, well, not, it wasn't an angle, it was a real life event, impacted the business and how it influenced things. And I actually, my article wrote the complete opposite. And what I actually wrote was that it didn't have any real impact on the business. And at the time, it felt like the biggest thing ever. But looking back at it and looking at how things panned out for WCW, the WWF, I actually came to the conclusion it had very little impact. And the reason is that if you think back a few weeks before that event to Monday Night Raw emanating out of Madison Square Garden, Stone Cold Steve Austin hit the Stone Cold Stunner on Vince McMahon. So the seeds were being planted before, weeks before the Survivor Series for the heel turn. And he was, for all intents and purposes, even by that point in time, starting to turn into that kind of authority figure, kind of almost revealing himself as the actual owner of the company. Whereas up until then, he kayfabed it and basically presented himself as just a commentator at Vince. But he was basically being given away prior to the Survivor Series. He was actually the owner of the company. Mm. And that the seeds were being planted about the whole Vince and Austin thing prior to that. And then what turned Austin into this mega over character was his angle with Mike Tyson a few weeks later, just after the Royal Rumble. And again, that was something that was planned prior to the whole thing with Brett. So that was the different take that I put on it in my article.
I think that's a fair argument, absolutely fair argument, and I absolutely see where you're coming from. So that's a fair point. One of the Survivor Series we mentioned there, 1990, the debut of The Undertaker, but also that night, do you remember more? It was the long-awaited night where the egg cracked. Who was going to be in it? All these things, who would be in the egg, turned out to be the gobbledygooker.
Oh, goodness. Listeners, believe it or not, and I think Andy will be able to relate to this. At school, you know, we were speculating for weeks, what could be in that egg? It was a giant, supersized egg that was shown on, I think, Superstars of Wrestling, Wrestling Challenge.
Yeah, week after week.
Yes. And
just by chance, it happened to hatch in that 3 hours when Survivor Series was on. But anyway.
Exactly, yeah. But no, everyone thought, look, this is going to be the unveiling of a new wrestler and it's all going to be really exciting. And no, it wasn't. It was somebody dressed up as a chicken who danced in the ring with Gene Oakland. So,
yeah. And I remember even then the fans could crap on stuff and they certainly crapped all over that.
Yeah.
The gobbledygooker, a gimmick that didn't last long. I mean, wasn't the rumors that actually hoped that they could use him in ring, you know, as a one of these, you know, like a character that would appeal to children or something like that? Was that one of the thoughts, you know, thinking with the bright ideas, this is what we could get out of it?
It may well have been. I mean, obviously they had a rooster only a year earlier in the Red Rooster, Terry Taylor. Then he eventually
walked around like a chicken.
Yeah. Got fed up and probably walking out in embarrassed
with all the neck injuries, walking out because impersonating a chicken.
Oh, goodness. Things these people did for money, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, we had bin men, we had repo men, we had farmers, we had basically, if you could think of a job, he was a wrestling gimmick.
Yeah, oh, goodness. The characters. So the boss man, the Mountie, the bird man. Wow. You don't see stuff like that anymore. That was wrestling.
That's wrestling. You can't beat that, can you? one here from Killian Murphy, actually mentioned the Survivor Series 2002 with the debut of the Elimination Chamber. A moment to remember for him, Lesnar F5 on the Big Show and then Heyman turning on Lesnar. Do you remember that one?
I don't actually. No.
I vividly remember the F5 on the Big Show and thinking, holy crap, that's monstrous. But remember Heyman turning on Lesnar, and then we had Heyman alongside the Big Show, and Lesnar turning into a babyface and trying to talk. That didn't go too well.
Yeah, almost as big a flop as the Gobbledygooker, but Yeah, that's something that I've surprisingly forgotten about. I'll be trying to forget the more embarrassing stuff that you just want to forget as soon as you watch it. But.
Somehow, even they didn't dare ask Brock Lesnar to dress up as a chicken. But So Survivor Series then? I mean, this year is actually the 30th anniversary, isn't it? It's 1987, the first ever Survivor Series. I mean, do you recall? Did you get to watch that one? Because before I'd started watching. The first one I saw was 1989.
Yeah, so. I mean, 1987 is when I was actually watching the WWF on ITV. So for those that are not aware, before it ended up as a staple part of Sky Television, WWF was broadcast initially on, I think it was also broadcast on Sky, which there was a channel called Sky Channel, which was available to a few thousand homes that had these very, very expensive satellite dishes. And that first launched around 1984. But for a larger audience, the first exposure to the WWF was January 23rd, 1987, I think it was. And that was the very first time it aired in the slot for World of Sport. And I wasn't aware that this was going to air. So instead of seeing Giant Haystacks and Big Daddy, what I got instead was a guy bigger than Big Daddy in Kamala the Ugandan Giant. But instead of just being an immobile fat lump, he was a very mobile fat lump who was doing a flying splash off the top rope. I saw the British Bulldogs and the Hart Foundation have really quite amazing looking match. It was only about 10 minutes, I think, but all energy, high tempo, really, really impressive. And then we had a strap match with Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage. And it was just the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. Completely different to what I'd been used to growing up watching British wrestling on World of Sport throughout the 80s. But that was all we'd get was infrequent airings of, I think it was Wrestling Challenge, every few months on ITV. We never got the pay-per-view, so I never got to see Survivor Series 87. The very first Survivor Series I actually got to see was the same one that you saw, which was 1989's version. And I got to see that a few weeks later. A friend of mine recorded it from Sky, and that was a very fun show. But a few years after it aired, I did get to see the first Survivor Series in 87. And one of the things that really impressed me was the fact that they were able to put on a 10-team Survivor Series elimination match. And the fact that they had 20 guys around the ring was so impressive. But the Survivor Series over the years has delivered some very, very memorable matches and moments, and
I think it's nice that it's rediscovering its roots, you know, rather than just being another pay-per-view where we see the same old matches and whatnot. Yeah, going back to that kind of that format of the elimination matches. I mean, just looking at the card from that 1989 one, what used to stand out as well is the teams all had names, you know. So there's Dusty Rhodes' team was the Dream Team. Bossman's team was the Enforcers. There was Randy Savage was the King at the time, so was the King's Court, taking on the 4x4s, which was Jim Duggan's team. Obviously, Hulk Hogan had these Hulkamaniacs up against the Million Dollar Team. The Rude Brood, Rick Rude's team, taking on Roddy's Rowdies. Jesus, try saying that when you've had a drink. the imaginatively titled The Ultimate Warriors, led by, you guessed it, the Ultimate Warrior, taking on the Heenan family. So, I mean, it was always, you know, finding the wrestler's name and the team name and all this. It really corny and cheesy, but it was a lot of fun, wasn't it? There was just something about that. Seeing guys that you didn't normally see team together all come together, fighting guys that you didn't normally see fighting each other. It was just a little bit different, wasn't it?
It was, and what really helped was that everyone was so distinctive and unique from the next person. It wasn't a case of, cookie cutter characters where everyone looks very similar to each other. And, we certainly had too much of that, maybe 5 years ago, 10 years ago, where, people weren't really distinguishable from one person to the next. And, I think the WWE has tried to, make a bit more of an effort to try and create some unique aspects to the individual talents that we see nowadays. But that was certainly that was very, very good. And it helped to kind of follow the product as well in those days. It was very easy to tell who was heels, who was faces. And the storylines moved a lot more slowly as well back then. So you can miss 4 weeks of television. And you really wouldn't have missed much because everything built towards these almost quarterly pay-per-views by that point in time. So after WrestleMania, you'd have a very, very, very slow build over 4 months leading into the SummerSlam. And, nowadays, if you miss TV for 2 weeks, you've missed one or two title changes, one or two turns from face to heel and vice versa.
And that's just the big show.
That's right. Brilliant. absolutely. And different commentators and all sorts. So it's very fast moving by comparison. Nothing stands still.
Have you got a particular favourite Survivor Series event then?
One that I enjoyed, I mean, from a nostalgia point of view, was Survivor Series 1990, just because of all the many big names that took part in that event, and obviously the debut of the guy who I know had known as Mean Mark Callis from WCW, who then turned up looking like somebody who was half dead and was known as The Undertaker. Obviously we had 4 minutes of technical brilliance with Ted DiBiase and Bret the Hitman Hart going at it the end of their elimination match. And we had the Warriors and Kerry Von Erich and Texas Tornado, the Legion of Doom, and obviously the Ultimate Warrior and his team, and so many memorable characters and names that became legendary and synonymous with the history of the WWF, all on one show. So that certainly holds a special place. But Survivor Series 1996 is another one. I thought that the Madison Square Garden crowd was just magnificent that night. And, the reaction to the WWE title match between Shawn Michaels and Sid was unforgettable. And if you haven't seen that match, just go and track it down, because there's nothing like Shawn Michaels throwing a hissy fit. And he just really, really didn't like the reaction that crowd gave him. And, that was one of the first examples of Bizarro World as well. It was Sid getting the babyface reaction when he wasn't supposed to. And that was almost like a forerunner for what is very commonly seen now, almost on a weekly basis.
The smart crowd.
Exactly.
As you mentioned, that 1990 event, that was a fantastic one, and it's one that even now I can go back and enjoy. Years and years later, I can go back and enjoy it almost as much as I enjoyed it at the time. It's really sort of survived the legacy of time, that one. Like you mentioned, there's so much happening there. It's just fun. And that is, that's the overriding thing with it. I think it was an event that it was about fun, and I certainly enjoyed that. What a particular match for me that always stood out was actually Survivor Series 1992, and that was Bret Hart defending the WWE Championship against the Intercontinental Champion at the time, Shawn Michaels. And obviously, you know, 5 years before we had the big swap over and whatnot, they had what was still one of my favorite matches between them two. I absolutely adored that match. I loved it. Loved the finish. It was brilliant. It was so smooth. It was just an absolutely fantastic wrestling match. And I just really, really enjoyed it. And I think it was about the time where Shawn Michaels was really sort of hitting it off. His character was really taking hold, that heel character, and he was really coming into his own as a singles competitor. And Bret Hart obviously established himself as the top guy in the singles rank. So I to this day really, really enjoy that match. But it's one that doesn't get talked about as much because obviously it was a long time before those two had the fallout and everything else that went alongside it.
Oh, but you're quite right. I mean, it was a fantastic match for its day and a really good technical match. Two guys in their pomp. You know, Brett was so, so good back then. And Shawn, while still not quite at his peak, was a very, very good talent. And obviously earlier that year, gone out as a single star after his famous split with Marty Jannetty and the, you know, who were obviously together, the Rockers. And, you know, he was a revelation as a single star, wasn't he? Was HBK. And, you know, their work in that match was superb. One of the best matches in the WWF of that year or of the early 90s, full stop. And, certainly, their work there was, just taster for all their other memorable legendary matches in the years that would follow.
Yeah, definitely. If you get the chance, go back and watch it. So, I mean, we're about out of time now, Mo, but I think the message is clear, isn't it? Survivor Series has always been lots of fun. Obviously, we hope it's going to be fun again this year. We will be doing a full preview of the card next week, but just a final word on the NXT event then. On the whole, are you looking forward to it?
Yes, I am, yeah. I mean, I didn't think the lineup for the previous show prior to SummerSlam was anything to get overly excited about. But the show itself was really, really good, and we both enjoyed it immensely. And so I've no doubt that with a really hot crowd and a bunch of individuals on the card that will be looking to, you know, really make their mark, I've got no doubt the show itself will be a home run once again.
Exactly. So there you go. But that just about wraps things up for this week. As we've mentioned there, you know, next week we will be back with a full preview of the Survivor Series event. But for now, my thanks to Mo Chatra, and our thanks to all of you for tuning in and listening to the show as always. We are on Twitter at PW_index if you want to get in touch with us. But until next week, from me, Andy Wales, it's bye-bye now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.